Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by me. Yes, it is solo pod romp time. Before we dive into today's variety of topics, I am reminding you to and thanking you for clicking that subscribe button, for liking, sharing, commenting, for leaving this podcast a glowing five-star review on any and all audio podcast platforms upon which you are listening, as well, as long as we're in the leaving a review conversation, as you have read any of my books, Word Up, Language of Betterarchy, Pop Propaganda, Yes I Am, and found any value in any of them, thank you for navigating on over to Amazon and leaving me some glowing reviews there. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the very best way to ensure that we get to stay in touch. And I think that does it for housekeeping. Let us dive into today's conversation. So it's going to be a little bit all over the place. I had my podcast partner, Emily, in town, and we were talking about the solo podcasting endeavor and how unnerving it can be to stare into a little dot above the screen and talk for hours at a time without any feedback. I'm still learning to get comfortable with this endeavor. And what I was saying to Emily, because we were talking about procrastination and like how it is that a writer, content creator, creative person actually gets stuff done. And the key is, which I was telling Emily, is here's the date that I record my solo podcast. I don't wait until I'm inspired or I'm in the mood or I'm having a good hair day, obviously. It's on the calendar and I show up for it, and that's how stuff gets done. Same with writing my books or creating my courses. I'm not waiting for inspiration to strike. I'm doing art of war, like just showing up and plowing through and trusting that the topics and the wording and all of that will follow. That being said, it has been occurring to me, like, why do people like listening to my podcast? Like, what is it people are getting out of them? So as you are someone who enjoys my solo podcast, I would love to hear from you in the comment stream. You know, feel free to send me an email. Why do you like listening to my solo podcast? What topics specifically do you like me talking about? All of this will help me narrow it down, because I tend to have, you know, foots and tendrils of consciousness and attention in so many different realms. And sometimes I can get a bit confused as to, I don't know, what you guys are into and what to talk about. That being said, I pretty much just talk about whatever's top of mind and what I'm into. I am nursing a little bit, I don't want to call it an injury. I think I pulled something last night, and yes, I was at dance, and no, it didn't happen while I was dancing. As always, my injuries are like not doing the hard, like athletic things I do, it's like something spazzy. And I think I pulled my psoas, so I'm not sure how long I'm gonna be able to maintain this seated posture. And it is healing very swiftly. And I observed myself as it was happening, really using my language of healing tools to let my body and my mind know this isn't a big deal. This is an upgrade. We're gonna move through this swiftly. And it reminded me, as a tiny daredevil gymnast, most of my injuries did not occur in gymnastics. Don't get me wrong, I had quite a few injuries happening in gymnastics, and I was a daredevil. So I was always, you know, like setting up these water slides in my pool that were like totally unsafe, or setting up other slides in my house on the staircase, or I'm gonna jump that giant pile of soot that's been hanging out in the cul-de-sac down the street and then like totally bite the dust. And so I was always getting in trouble for my various daredevil injuries, specifically because it would affect my gymnastics training. And so I would pretend like I wasn't injured. And I realized that I was cultivating the idea like, if I just ignore the injury really hard, then it's gonna go away. And like the invisible powers will all converge to make this like instantly healed. And I noticed myself doing that last night. All right. So a lot of people have been asking me, let's see, I'm recording this on the 25th of September. So I've been fielding a lot of emails and messages around what I think about the Charlie Kirk thing, or I think it's really been mostly that. And here's what I think. I don't have an opinion. And I would like us to normalize, since we've been doing a series of denormalizing the demoralization, and I will come back to that at some point during today's pod romp. I like the idea of normalizing not having an opinion on things that we're not educated about, don't have enough information, it's not interesting, you know, like it's okay to not have an opinion. I didn't really track Charlie Kirk, minus like, you know, I've probably seen like a dozen clips of him doing his college debates, but I'm not familiar enough with him to have an opinion to know if he's racist, if he's not racist, if he's a saint, if he's not a saint. I'm gonna give you guys my honest opinion on this, which is the volume of reaction and response to this has me pretty sure it's all as fake and gay as everything else coming out of Sham Show Land, and that it is a setup to distract us, to harvest our loosh, to create more division amongst us, and nothing about it feels real at all. Plus, like I said, I don't know him well enough to have an opinion, except let's say it is real. Like, of course, I'm not advocating for murder. And I did hear myself say, as is always the case now, I don't know if it is real. And now those words are like inextricably bound in my mind to that allegedly Jewish state in the Middle East around which there is so much chaos and controversy. And it's another realm in which I don't have an opinion because I don't know enough about it. So let us denormalize the forcing of taking sides and having opinions. And it's okay to just claim neutrality and focus on our real deal analog life. Like, I got into this. Maybe it was a year ago with someone who used to be a friend back in LA. And he was messaging me on social media like a bunch of pro-Zionist stuff. And I said very respectfully, like, I totally get that you're passionate about this and that this is a very meaningful issue for you. And I absolutely respect that. And I don't know enough about it to take a position or a side. So this is really falling on deaf ears. I'm much more focused on and interested in what's happening on American soil, and specifically, and this has been like my pivot this year, what's happening where I live, where I, you know, dare to dream, get to have an impact on what is happening in my local community. And he just would not let it go. He was so insistent that I not only take a side, but take his side. And I kept saying, and it was shocking to me that it wasn't landing, like, I'm ignorant about the issue. I've never been there. All I know is what the talking heads are telling me to think. I haven't done any independent research on it because I'm not interested, and I'm putting my research muscles into other topics. Like, I thought it would be such a clean, I don't want to say a way out, because it's not like I was trying to manipulate the situation. I was really just being honest. I don't know enough about it to take a side or have an opinion, and I don't think it even matters because I don't live there, and my opinion is not going to move any needles. He would not let it go. He was so annoyed with me. And I see this happening. Like, of course we hear it in like the mainstream propaganda media where people are so hung up if they won't use the G word, genocide. And it's like, I have no problem using the word genocide. All of those experimental gene therapy injections that were heavily shoved down the public's throat, those are genocide. The children's vaccine schedule, genocide. 5G frequencies, genocide. I feel like we have enough genocidal issues happening on this soil that I can put constructive effort into bringing awareness to and transmuting. I don't need to get hung up on all these overseas genocides. Now, that's not to say I don't see the messiness in terms of America's involvement with that state, and I've been very clear for over a decade on this. A, I don't really think we should be involved, but B, I'm completely not okay with censorship and rescinding our First Amendment right in this country because of what's happening over there. Like, all of that is obviously messed up, but none of this is my point. The point is, let us normalize not having an opinion on everything. It's really okay to just claim neutrality, to claim ignorance, to not need to take the divide and conquer, choosing sides bait, and stay in whatever lanes we're choosing for ourselves. Like, that is totally a-okay. So my opinion on the Charlie Kirk matter is that this is as fake and gay as it gets, and what they want us to do is get really bunged up and have these giant emotional reactions and create more conflict amongst ourselves, because that's the behavior that helps the predator class get away with their predatory nonsense. So to me, it just feels a lot more sane, strategic to not get involved, because I don't, it's so loud. And this is something I talk about in my Pop Propaganda Digital Media Literacy course, but I'm going to pause for a sip for a moment, which is like being a good journalist, being an original thinker, an independent thinker, being what they try to demonize as conspiracy theorists, we all have one thing in common. A yen for pattern recognition. And this is not like a lot of people like to demonize this as just like, well, you can't count on your feminine intuition to figure out what's going on in the world. We need like data and statistics. And that goes back to the masculine imbalance that is being completely misunderstood and like distorted into this return of the divine feminine, like putting women who are operating from a masculine imbalance into positions of power and thinking like problem solved, now everything's rebalanced. No. The issue with the imbalance between the masculine and the feminine is lauding and uplifting reason and logic and data and statistics over pattern recognition, intuition, emotion, these more subtle and unseen ways of tapping into knowledge. And so, going back to pattern recognition, one of the things that I teach in my Pop Propaganda Media Literacy course is a lot of times, I don't even need to know the specifics or the details of Op X, whatever it is. All I need to track is how loud are they cranking the volume? And when the volume is cranked to 10, and you have every, celebrity, influencer, shill, pawn, talking head, all of them are coming out with like this exaggerated emotion, and it's all we can talk about. And I did tap into like 30 seconds of the Charlie Kirk Memorial, which pretty much looked like the Super Bowl to me, as far as like production value and how big, like how much pageantry. So for me, it's like the largesse of the response and the volume of the response at this point is enough for me to know this is not. This is fake. Real life isn't necessarily so loud. It doesn't have everyone responding in lockstep with their fake tears over someone who, again, I don't know him. I'm not that familiar with him, but I didn't see him as that impactful of a thought leader in our culture. And again, I claim ignorance. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I missed something. Maybe he was that big of a deal who did touch that many lives in this way. But to me, my take is this is a giant op. And one of the things I do to safeguard my consciousness, my sacred attention, and like my sovereignty on all of the levels is when the predator class, the propagandists, and the social engineers are telling everyone, hey, look over here, turn your attention this way. I know my smartest move is to look the other way and not give the op in question my sacred attention, because it feels like, I don't know. It's layered, it's vulnerable, it's dangerous. You know, black magic, frequency wars, mind control, like all of that is happening when they're coercing the masses to look in the same direction at the same time, which is generally my cue to look the totally, totally other way. So I'm not bunged up. Don't have any emotions about it. I'm just a little bit tired and annoyed at the stupidity of the sham show theatrics. And I'm excited for us as a collective to evolve out of this nonsense. I just saw when I was figuring out how to fashion a headscarf so that I won't be fussing with my hair constantly throughout the podcast, I was tuning in to globalist shill Russell Brand commenting on globalist shill Jimmy Kimmel's fake apology for like whatever that nonsense was. So my two cents on more shilling celebrity nonsense is, for me, Jimmy Kimmel will always be Jimmy the sports guy from K-Rock in the 80s. And he and who's the other guy? He was the Tool Time guy, who I think he's gone to the right now, Adam Carolla. So they both have these kind of like interstitial little like side gigs on K-Rock, which was like the big, you know, pop music. It was like a little cooler and edgier than Kiss FM growing up in LA. And I'm already blanking on his name, Jimmy whatever. He had this like tiny sports commentary segment. And then Adam Carolla had his like, you know, manly Tool Time thing. And they were just like this duo. So in my mind, he's still that. And he never got elevated to like talk show host status in the way that like the mainstream media has been trying to do with him. There was no problem at the network when he said, you know, hospitals are being overwhelmed with all these COVID patients. And I'm going to sidestep the urge to fact check that nonsense. No one had a problem with him saying that the unvaccinated should not be admitted to hospitals and they should just be allowed to go home to die. He literally said that. But everyone's bunged up about whatever he said. I don't even know what it was about Charlie Kirk's murder. So, okay, to that. I am truly annoyed with the attempt of, I don't even want to do the left right because it's not even about the binary. Like, it's so false and fake. But the people who are buying into the mainstream media shtick, attempting to make this a free speech issue when businesses are allowed to fire people for saying things that make the business look bad. I have been fired for saying things that make my bosses and employers look bad. This is a tough lesson that I learned in my 20s when I was a television publicist and some journalist was giving me a hard time and I said something snotty and the partners at the firm were like, you gotta go. Like, you're representing us, you can't say that. This is adulthood and employment 101. And so the attempt to conflate this into a free speech issue when we are actually navigating real deal threats to the First Amendment and have been, I would say since COVID, but the reality is it started before COVID. Yes, there was all like the woke identity politics SJW stuff that political shill Obama gave us, but there were issues with criticizing Israel even before that. I remember after Hurricane Katrina being totally shocked that FEMA payouts were being withheld from individuals and businesses that had been on the record as being critical of the state of Israel. So already I was like, that shouldn't be a problem in this country. We should be allowed to criticize whatever we want. But obviously, the attacks on censorship, on freedom of speech, have escalated massively since COVID and under Obama. And you know what? I really have an issue with that guy, because for the past couple of years, he has been banging the drum around putting controls around free speech. This guy who won a Nobel Peace Prize for just getting elected, and he didn't even get elected. The enterprise purchased his election, his position, and feel free to read Coup de 12 by David Martin to understand how that scam went down. But it's just like how they try to muddy the waters with their like bait and switch, and it's so annoying. So hearing globalist shill, what's his face, Russell Brand, like giving his commentary on the Jimmy Kimmel situation, all of it is just another, it's like Victor Victoria in 3D, right? The IMAX version of Victor Victoria 3D on multiple dimensions at the same time of like, how many snow jobs can we pull? And think about like that very simple shell game. If you've ever been to New York or, you know, any kind of town where you've got these hustlers on the street who are, you know, trying to take your money. And what they do is they create these distractions. It's what magicians do as well. Like, oh, look over here while I screw you here. That is what is happening right now with this Charlie Kirk thing, which I think the op is serving a number of different agendas. And it's not clear to me yet. Like, there are so many. And we'll see in ensuing days, weeks, months, like which freedoms they try to roll back because of this, or who gets propped up, or getting rid of Jimmy Kimmel, which just seemed to me like a business decision because his show was tanking anyway. But we'll see. It's clearly an op, and I don't have any more information on it than that, except it's so lame and gay. This is the type of stuff that makes me want to get out of media altogether. I don't want to look at media. I'm embarrassed to have a podcast when other podcasters are working so hard to prop up this nonsense. But don't worry, I'm not going anywhere. I'll still be here rambling about it all. Random thoughts today. Where do we start? Let's start with the false dichotomy, just because it's in the middle of my list. It's not even at the beginning of my list. So I know I've spoken about false dichotomies before on this show, and I want to get really granular with the unpacking of some of the false dichotomies I'm seeing swirling around me right now. So false dichotomy is a logical fallacy, right? It's a type of erroneous thinking that would have us believing that to like the color green means I necessarily hate the color red, right? It creates this either or that is usually fictional, right? Remember George Bush saying, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. And it's like, no, I can be totally with you and not go along with what you're dictating. I can be totally with you and not fall in line with the Patriot Act and all the other nonsense. And it doesn't actually validate the conclusion you're attempting to staple to that behavior. So this is one of, I mean, we see this all the time with the left and right thing, right? If you're pro-life, then you can't be a Democrat. If you are not down with issue X, then you must hate the Republicans. Like, it's the point of the binary, right? Of all dichotomies, is to force us into one or the other while denying gray area, nuance, neutrality, like an infinite array of other perspectives or reasons why we might take a stance or not take a stance. Like, I'm thinking of the person I mentioned who was really, really upset that I was unwilling to take a stance on the Israel-Palestine situation. And I've talked about this before when Betterarchy came out and I was being booked on a lot of right-wing talk shows and I was speaking out against the misuse of the phrase anti-Semitism to shut down conversation around the political situation in Israel and America's entanglement in that. And I had so many talk show hosts tell me that I was anti-Israeli, that I was anti-Semitic, that I was pro-Palestine, that I was pro-Hamas, and I'm like, none of those things are true. None of them. I'm just simply taking issue with the way this phrase is being used, but that's what the false dichotomy does. We can think of it as a type of mind virus, as a flavor of Wetiko that kind of breaks the brain so that it can only see in black or white, right? And this is something that, Joseph Goebbels talked about a lot, Adolf Hitler talked about a lot, is like, to sway the masses to go along with whatever the hidden agenda is going to be, this reductive black-white thinking is a phenomenal tool of the propagandists and the social engineers. So just to give us like a solid foundation of where we're coming from, I'm going to reread the false dichotomy section from Pop Propaganda and Illustrated Guide, just so we have, our solid basis, and then we'll unpack it a little bit further, or a lot of it further. So, from your favorite slash the only illustrated guide to propaganda that exists on the planet that I know of, the false dichotomy. A false dichotomy is a specific kind of reductive oversimplification in which two diametrically opposed points of view are presented as the only options when other possibilities are actually available. Either you are with us or you are against us is a classic example of a false dichotomy, as is, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. False dichotomies aim to fragment the world into two oppositional categories. The specific polarity constructs are irrelevant. The goal is to force a divide, to coerce people into choosing sides and then injecting tension and ill will between them, right? So we could see it as a straight up propaganda strategy. So what popped to mind as I was reading this is, yeah, it's this forced, like, that there has to be conflict to just have different perspectives. Like, my whole life, I've been pretty virulently pro choice. And I don't even like even that framing right there, pro-choice, anti-choice, right? To create an identity construct around a belief in what is kosher, what should be fair game, and what isn't, like that in itself is another propaganda strategy because then we can otherize people who believe differently by calling them pro-lifers or pro-choicers. But the reason I bring this up is because even though my whole life I have held the belief that it is a woman's God-given right to empty her womb if she wants to. And I'm not going to go down a big crazy rabbit hole, but I've done shows on this where it's like, I do think that it's complicated and I do think that there's karma and I don't think that there are any easy outs in that situation. However, I do think it should be legal and available and every woman's choice. That being said, I completely understand and empathize with those who aren't down with abortion and just don't think it's kosher. Like, I understand that perspective. Now, for me, based on my core values, and we all have different core values and priorities, freedom is always going to be number one. So just because, if I didn't believe in abortion for myself, like I wouldn't try to impose that on other people. It's why I always say I'm not anti-vax and I never will be. And it's not just because I am aware of the deleterious effects and frequencies embedded in anti, and I understand that were I to identify as anti-vax, I would only be empowering and normalizing the vaccine, the pro-vax stance. But if someone wants to inject genocide into their veins, that is their God-given right. They could do whatever they want, right? Like, for me to expect others to respect my freedom means that I am required to do the same. So, but all of this is to say is there doesn't have to be a false dichotomy. Like, I can be a person who believes it is a woman's right to choose, and I can respects that, and I can also respect and understand the other perspective. They don't have to be in conflict, right? We live in a realm of paradox. Like, it's okay for things to be unresolved, but we don't have to like get bunged up about it or create types of people around it. I don't want to get us too off track, but I'm gonna have a sip. Okay, so the reason why I'm focusing on false dichotomies right now is not just because of the political situation here in the States, which has us thinking, you know, left has to hate right, you know, right is better than left. Like, it's keeping us in that binary, and keeping us, and again, it's not just like about political allegiances, it's about programming the brain to operate in this false dividing way. So the more that that's foisted upon us through the media machine, through social engineering and propaganda, the more that's entraining our brains to start to see the world in these reductive binaries, which is why it's so important for you and me and those of us with eyes to see in this conversation to be okay with not having an opinion, with seeing both sides, with claiming neutrality, with, you know, riding the center, right? And that's why people get, you know, people have been programmed to get so triggered by those taking more centrist perspective, is that it collapses their whole game. So not only does it collapse their whole game for us to not take sides, but then those who are taking sides and haven't yet cultivated the strength of character or the resources necessary to examine where their behavior is contributing to the problem. So those people aren't going to want, they're not going to be welcoming of the reflection that says, hey, you don't have to choose a binary, right? Like, you don't have to play into this divisive game. And so what I'm realizing as far as people getting so triggered around that is a lot of people aren't yet ready to look at themselves and to see where they're contributing to the degradation of the social contract and our culture, which is why that centrist position pisses people off so much. So the reason why I am currently focusing on false dichotomies is because, as I've explained to you guys, I am narrowing my focus from saving the multiverse, saving the galaxy, saving the world, saving America, to let me see if I can have a, cancel clearly, let me see how I can have a positive impact in my local on the ground community that I'm meandering through on a daily basis that I'm connected to. And in 2018, a really damaging false dichotomy was dropped into Santa Fe by way of billionaire philanthrocapitalists. So the way that it started, and I'm gonna give you guys some background on the article that I'm currently working on, just to fill it in a little bit. But basically, like, what has happened in Santa Fe is that there's been a surge of popularity and visibility and press around indigenous activism. And the result, the consequences of this influx of indigenous activism has led to and continues to foster the disrespect and the erasure of Hispanic culture and traditions and history in a town where Hispanics hold a 51% majority, right? And so I've watched what has happened to this town because it didn't used to be like this. And I'm like, where has this come from? So before I get into where it's come from, I'm just gonna give you guys some examples of how this is happening here. So of course, during, Antifa tear down historical statue season, which happened in the fall of 2020, a violent, angry, and well-funded mob of indigenous activists converged upon the plaza here in Santa Fe and tore down the soldiers' monument. Police were told to stand down. City Hall looked the other way. We know exactly who did it, and everyone's been given a pass. Not only have people been given a pass, and I will come back to this, but the primary activist group responsible for this has been given countless grants and donations. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, by these giant billionaire philanthropies. Think Ford Foundation, think George Soros's Open Society Foundation, think Pritzker's, think Kellogg and Rockefeller's and Gates, right? These are the groups that are funding this. And when we really think about it, like, are these billionaires really like heart of gold do-gooders? Like, when would that happen? The vast majority of the wealth that's funding this activism, this wealth was created on the slaughter and displacement of indigenous people. It's mostly oil and gas money. But then you take, you know, like Kellogg, and we'll get to what Kellogg had to do with this, but like Kellogg was like monocrop agriculture to prop up their cereal empire, and that destroyed the lands of indigenous people and displaced indigenous people. Then you have oil and gas money coming from like McCune and the Pritzkers and Pew and, you know, Ford Foundation, who not only made a bunch of money making cars, but also making military vehicles for the Third Reich. Remember, Henry Ford was given a special award by Adolf Hitler for his pronounced hatred of Jews and everything that he did to prop up the Reich. So we look at the wealth that's financing these activists. It's extractive wealth that has hurt indigenous communities. So there's a bunch of hypocrisy there. Okay, there's that. So we had the statue taken down, and other statues have also been taken down since then at the demands of these indigenous activist groups that are being funded by these giant, giant justice philanthropy groups, okay? So that's one piece of it. The next piece of it is, so let's keep in mind that Santa Fe is the oldest capital city in this entire country. In fact, Santa Fe as the capital city of Nuevo Mexico predates the founding of America. Santa Fe was founded in the 1600s. America was founded, what, 1776? I bring this up because it's foundational to this country, and the fact that we have rituals and traditions in Santa Fe that date back over 300 years is a pretty big deal and is a testament to a connection to a history that sure is ugly and bloody and complicated like every history of every land everywhere, because humans have not yet evolved out of their tendency to war and enslave and do horrible things to one another. But I bring this up because these same activist groups that are funded by these bajillionaires have also demanded the end to certain rituals that have been endured for over 300 years, because they claim that those rituals are an affront to their indigenous culture and hurt their feelings. Now, there's so many pieces to this, you guys. So, where do I even start? The narcissism of activism, of wokeness, of like snowflake crybaby culture is really astounding to me. And what is astounding to me is that it's defended and validated, and like policy is shifted, and statues are destroyed, and landmarks are destroyed, and 300 plus year old rituals are banned because a small group of people who are confused and ignorant as to the purpose of these rituals or these monuments and choose to make it all about them because. Victim culture, social justice activism, like it's all about me and my hurt feelings and my unintegrated trauma, right? If I'm playing the role of victim and deciding that a 300 plus year old ritual is actually directed at hurting my own feelings, like that's insane. That's kind of the definition of insanity, that we think that the whole world revolves around the victims. Like it used to be, I mean, I don't know what it was before we were heliocentric. I guess we thought that everything revolved around the earth, right? And then Copernicus, if I'm guessing at my history because I was educated in this country, and I don't think it was that much more than like a lot of indoctrination. So forgive me if I'm getting this wrong, but as I understand it, I think it was Copernicus, was it Galileo, came along and said, no, actually the sun is the center of our solar system and all these planets rotate around the sun. And that was very controversial and he got in a lot of hot water for that. But these days, everything revolves around the victims. So it used to be a heliocentric solar system. Now it's a victim-centric solar system. And because someone has gone through like their activist training and is being very well funded by these wealthy justice philanthropists who are using the victims and the marginalized underclasses to do their dirty work for them. Everything is supposed to revolve around the victims' misinformation and revisionist history, and we're just supposed to kowtow to them until they decide their feelings aren't hurt anymore. But the problem with this strategy is once we give in, it's like I really see the social justice snowflake victim perspective is very similar to like a toddler. So you have a toddler who's throwing a tantrum, say in like you go to the grocery store, and the toddler decides he's going to kick and scream and freak out until you buy him the Super Bowl, right? So you buy the child the Super Bowl, you're programming the child, you're conditioning the child to say, oh, okay, if you throw tantrums, you get what you want. So it does the exact opposite. What it does is it encourages more tantrum throwing because we've set up this Pavlovian response. Oh, I throw a tantrum, I get what I want. So the idea that the more that we cede to the completely unhinged demands of the unhinged social justice warrior victim mentality, that at some point we're going to hit, like, they're gonna feel better and then that's gonna stop. No, that's not how it works. It's never going to stop. And that's what we're seeing here. So we have these well-funded activists who demanded that these statues come down. And then the mayor, who's not from here, he conceded and he's like, sure, do whatever you want. Destroy historical landmark. That's fine. We're not going to stop you. Oh, you want to put a stop to this 300 year plus year old ritual because you've decided that it's all about you. It's not about a culture that has roots here going back over 400 years, celebrating their culture, their ancestors, their ways. It's not about that at all. It's all about hurting you, right? This is the demented mindset that's propping this thing up. And then taking that this, like, this is the false dichotomy that is to honor Spanish culture and Spanish history in a town that was settled and founded and yes, colonized back in the 1600s when none of us were alive, is to denigrate indigenous culture, that is a false dichotomy. And what it suggests is that there's an inextricable bondage between these two groups, that there's a quantum entanglement. And this is why this type of activism, this type of logical fallacy is so disempowering, because it does create these bonds that don't have to be there, right? So, you know, we see it in the left and the right thing where people are just following the party line and it's like, okay, well, I don't want to take an opinion that falls outside the bounds of this very narrow tribal identity, because then I'm going to be associated with the other side, right? This is how the thinking gets demented and reductive and divided by this. Like, I cannot tell you guys how many times that back when I did, you know, was posting more political stuff on Facebook, which I'm not doing anymore, that people from like my family sphere that I grew up with, like older boomers, were like, are you a Republican now? Are you watching Fox News now? And it's like, why would you assume that? Because I understand why they would assume that, because they've been indoctrinated to assume that like, if you have this belief, then you're a Nazi and you're a racist and you're a Trumper and you're this. This is what we call in pop propaganda, egregious associations. And as long as we're on the topic, I'm going to read it to us. The egregious associations illustration is the one I get the most questions about. So I'm going to read us about egregious associations, and then I'm going to, I'll give us a very special bonus walkthrough of the illustration, then we'll get back to the false dichotomy. Okay. Egregious association. Egregious associations, I did make up that term. It's not like an official Bernaysian term. Egregious associations are a means of stereotyping the opposition. Negative beliefs, allegiances, and character traits are stapled to various ideas and behaviors in an attempt to bind them to the person they are meant to demonize, person or groups. Egregious associations are repeated over and over and over again, thus creating an inextricable link between them and the people and groups to which they are being effectively stapled in the minds of the public. Egregious associations are also projected onto certain narratives or agendas to make them seem ridiculous or untrue. When the mainstream media started covering the fake news phenomenon, it was always accompanied by a Pizzagate graphic, thus linking the two ideas in the public mind and creating association between fake news and child trafficking / sexual abuse. All right, so let me walk you through the illustration. So Q, from those of us who remember the whole QAnon situation, which is definitely not what the mainstream made it out to be. So QAnon, and these are like little chains that I've drawn. So QAnon was inextricably linked to MAGA, and MAGA people are like fat and dumb, right? In the public mind, that's the egregious association. And then they're linked to legit Nazis, right? All this is done through propaganda. And then Nazis are linked to being anti-vax, right? Remember, that was such a big deal in 2021, 2022. And then if you're anti-vax, then you're a crazy conspiracy theorist wearing a tinfoil hat who's going to go off about crazy conspiracy things. And then if you're a crazy conspiracy theorist, you must think the earth is flat, because that's another egregious association they've gone the distance to link in the public mind by way of like Joe Rogan and other podcasters of the like. What does this have to do with false dichotomies? I'm so glad you asked. I'm recalling the thought after taking that little tangent. I don't remember, maybe it'll come back to me, but the point around these false dichotomies, and I see this happening here on the ground in Santa Fe, is the idea is to honor Hispanic culture, to honor Hispanic monuments, and to honor the meaning that those rituals and monuments hold for those people who hail from those cultures, whose ancestors are directly linked to, you know, the wars and the traditions and the fiestas and all of that that have happened throughout the years and generations. The false dichotomy is that to honor Hispanic culture means to denigrate indigenous culture. And this is a logical fallacy that is fundamentally untrue. But this propaganda technique has been so successfully deployed upon the people of Santa Fe, and specifically, and I hate to say this, and I don't even, like, yes, there are always exceptions, of course, but I was really shocked to see the consistency in, like, it's white liberals who mostly are not from here, primarily, like 99%. And it's so interesting because we saw this during, like, Me Too and all the social justice stuff. It's like this white guilt, this white savior syndrome, the people who have swallowed the Kool-Aid that has us thinking that, like, if we don't have a certain degree of melanin or don't belong to these certain groups, that we should feel guilty and, like, prostrate ourselves, something. Anyway, I was really shocked to see that is a high majority of those people who believe that to restore a statue or to allow a 300 plus year celebration to continue is to harm Indians. And it's so insane. It's so insane for so many reasons. Like, I'm so curious about the Indian PSYOP. And I've been talking, like, Emily and I have been talking about it, and I've been, you know, looking, like, where did this start? And I do think that Standing Rock played a huge role in plugging this into the public mind. But I also think that it goes back to, remember when Marlon Brando won the Academy Award and he sent this woman up who was allegedly a Native American woman to accept the award on his behalf and say, like, whatever it was she said about the activism. And then we found out later she wasn't even a Native American. It wasn't, like, it was all an act. I do think that played a part in it. And God, it just happens on so many levels. And it's so heartbreaking because, like, we know that Native Americans were treated horribly. Like, this is for sure stolen land. Like, granted, Mexico, there was a payout to Mexico. So it's like there was some sort of treaty, like something evened it out. But if we're going, like, basic morality, this land was stolen and that's a problem. And Indians have been given a really raw deal. Like, they don't get a whole month. It's not like Indian lives matter. Not that I'm lobbying for some big movement, because you guys know, in my perspective, all movements are ops. But I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to see that, like, Native Americans have gotten a really raw deal in North America. But the problem is that the effort going into propping them up right now, I don't personally believe is genuine, and I see it working against them yet again. Like, remember the smallpox blankets? I thought when I moved back to Santa Fe in 2019, and I wasn't really sure why, I was just following my gut, and then they pulled the FOVID op, and I'm like, awesome, because I'm in the one state in the country that has the most sovereign Indian tribes, and so they're gonna not kowtow to these BS mandates, and we're gonna be golden. And yet, it was the tribes who drank the Kool-Aid more so than anyone. That does it for the first half of today's solo pod romp. As you are inspired to join me for the super spicy second half of this conversation, you can find that on both my Locals and Patreon communities, dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/DannyKatz. At both communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at DannyKatz.com to like, share, subscribe, leave me glowing reviews on the podcast platforms, as well as on Amazon for my books. I did mention in today's podcast my Language of Sovereign Authority webinar, which is an absolute must for those wanting to remain unmessable. I usually say that with the F word, and we are on Progressive Radio Network, and I like to be respectful of different media platforms, cultures, and it is a phenomenal, invaluable tool in maintaining our sovereign authority, regardless of what is happening in the outside world. And this is something I do get deeper into, I think in the second half of the conversation, is really anchoring ourselves in our internal authority so that we don't have the urge to reorganize external reality as a means of having ourselves feeling safe and supported. When we do that from the inside out, when we know our sovereign authority and our agency and our self-esteem from the inside, then we get to move through the world unfazed with sham show shenanigans and the ridiculousness that we're living through now. So do check out the Language of Sovereign Authority on my site, as well as my Pop Propaganda Digital Media Literacy class for teens and grownups alike. All right, tribe, thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are Onoscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.